Hello and welcome to another episode of Interviews with the Experts, a podcast series as part of Dr. Farah Raza's project on transplantation medicine. This podcast has been funded by the Oxford Law Faculty's Internet Engagement Fund. My name is Frances Hand and I'm a DPhil student in law specialising in reconceptualising violence against women in UK maternity practice. Today, I'm sitting down with David Nix, the founder and lifetime president of the Donor Family Network, a charity who works to support donor families. Hi, David. Thank you so much for speaking to me today.
It's a pleasure.
So if you could just start by please telling us a bit more about who you are and your work.
Well, I'm one of the aged ones, as you can see. I was a police officer for 30 years. And then when I retired from that, I started my own company in logistics, which I carried on with that until I was 74 when I packed it in. But I've been, as you know, I've been involved with the Donor Family Network since its inception. My daughter died in America, where she donated, and I wanted to find out what happened for donor families in this country because we were treated so well by the Americans. And at that time, it was not a lot, and that's 26 years ago. In fact, it's 27 years ago last week. So we went to a couple of sketchy meetings at a hotel, which were nothing short of appalling, really, because there was no empathy as such. The people tried their best, but it wasn't really conducive to a good atmosphere in respect of donor families. And there was only about four families there anyway. So they coordinators at that time suggested that we basically formed a little local support group. So we did. And that little local support group has grown and grown and grown, and it continues to grow. And we had to change its name after 12 months to become something that was more nationally acceptable. So we chose the Donor Family Network. And so we started that. We had the first meeting in July of 1997 at my house. And people who attended agreed that it was going to be a good idea to have an organisation. And then because of my background, I suppose I took a rather cautious approach, and we didn't become a charity until 2003, when we were financially stable and able to stand on our own feet. Then shortly after, not too long after that, we secured a plot at the National Memorial Arboretum, not knowing how long it would take us to raise the money for a national memorial for donor families. But we got the plot, and that was the main thing for us. Then we started off in a very low-key fashion because we weren't very well known, or we didn't have many members, but we were growing. And by the memorial was actually opened in 2016 by the Duke of Gloucester. And before it was opened, every single aspect of it had been paid for, and we had no debts. It was in the insurance and the maintenance contract. Everything was done so that it's in the National Memorial Arboretum in perpetuity. So we formed the Donor Family Network, we had some ideas from America, which we hopefully adapted to the British way, because they do take things a little bit differently to us, shall I say that. And we introduced various things into the Donor Family Network. For example, in America, for 2 years, they will send you a card on the anniversary of donation, which was a great idea. But we decided that we should send a card every year to every one of our members, a card on the anniversary, because it was someone else remembering that horrible day. Horrible, but very much a legacy day. And we have people who are 30 years down the road on donation who still want the cards. We stop them whenever people feel that they've had enough, or they can stand on their own 2 feet, they don't need to be reminded, but others receive a card every single year. And the feedback we get from that is tremendous. And of course, we introduce the badge, the logo, which selfishly I have a responsibility for. every good charity, or every charity really, I suppose, has their own logo. And we wanted one. So we had competition. A lady came up with the, a recipient lady came up with the idea that forget-me-not, because no donor will ever be forgotten. And which was a very good idea. And the symbol in America for donor families is the butterfly. And so I decided, having the American connection, to sit the butterfly on the forget-me-not as a symbol of hope and new life. And it's worked so well in this. We're well into six figures for those logos, well into six figures have got out now, and they go all over the world, and that's great. And we do lots of other things as well for in relation to the Donor Family Network. We've just recently, we held a trial in the Leeds district, because obviously telling someone their loved ones is not going to recover is horrendous. And there's much truth in what people say, that when they're told, they go cold. So we decided to do something about that. And we introduced a trial in Leeds, the huggers. And they're about two thirds the size of a blanket. They are very warm and soft. And they're in the Donor Family Network colour, which is purple. So to take it away totally from hospital blankets and everything else, because I think it's important that you take the clinical side out of it, and you've got something that you could actually grab hold of. And every family can have these huggers, and the Donor Family Network pays for them all. The NHS don't have to pay for anything. And the amount of, again, the feedback we've had from in respect of those, the huggers, is tremendous. And we held this trial in Leeds and then in Greater Yorkshire. And then we got a request from NHSBT themselves, could we extend it nationwide? So, and that's exactly what we've done. And they're going very well. And it all triggers into if people have a positive outlook from donation through something so tragic as losing a loved one, then they will spread the word. And by spreading the word that it's good to donate, when people are asked that question, it will be a reminder of the fact that they have been told about it, and they can't do anything about what's happened, but they can make something positive out of it.
I think that's beautiful. And I love the idea of your logo as well, encompassing the forget-me-not and the butterfly. I think that's lovely. It kind of runs into my second question, so I guess we kind of split it from there. But could you tell me a little bit more about the specific projects that the Donor Family Network works on?
The Donor Family Network now has the full backing of NHSBT. We have many of our families who come to us and have gone through the various stages, who then go forward to sit on organ donation committees or on stakeholder groups that, and we basically look at donor families to see whether or not it was something that would help them or would be of value to other people with what their experience, how they view donation and transplantation, etc. And there's a whole sort of different scenario in respect of donor families and what good they can do. And I mean, just by giving their story to professionals gives them a different outlook, because they're looking, most of the professionals obviously are looking at from the recipient viewpoint. And to have a donor family viewpoint is very important. And we have I'm the deputy chair of Transplant Sport, which is the other side of the equation. And we have the donor families. In 1999, I was asked would I like to go to the British Transplant Games? And I went. And I was shocked, because I was my wife and I were the only donor family members there. And when people learned that we were sort of in the crowd and everything else, because up now there's around about 1,000 competitors have all had transplants at the games, and people were making a beeline to speak to us because they wanted to speak to a donor family. And an awful lot of recipients want to say thank you but don't know how. So we now have a big presence at the British Transplant Games. In fact, we have our own team. We don't compete, but we have our own team, and which is the way they like it. And we have a stand there throughout the games, and we also have people within the donor family network. We run sessions on how to write a letter to your donor family, because the majority of donor families don't want to meet their recipients, but they would love to have a letter just saying thank you so much, because for someone to say thank you is the world. And we lost Rebecca in America, and we've had letters to say that 74 people benefited from Rebecca's donations, and I've never wanted to know who her donations went to, but I'm aware of the ages and the sexes of a few of them, and that's great. And it's because it wasn't my legacy, it was my daughter's. And just as I view the Donor Family Network as a legacy of my daughter's, not mine, because she's the one that's driven it forward. And that's how I view it, rightly or wrongly. That's my opinion. And but we do. And other things that we do, for example, if a young mother with a baby, say 12 months, 18 months old, or perhaps a little bit older, loses their partner, husband, and he donates or she donates, then they struggle, and we will put them in contact with someone else who started off that journey in very similar circumstances a few years before, so that they can then lead them through until they're able to sort of stand on their own feet and realize they're not going mad. They will learn to smile again, they will learn to laugh, and that life will go on regardless, and that they should be very proud of what their loved ones have done. So that has also proved very, very fruitful in respect of helping people. And because how can you tell someone how it feels, what it feels, they're not going mad and everything else, unless you actually understand the emotions they are going through? So that's another aspect that we do. And of course, we have a precious gift service every year where recipients and donor families attend. And in fact, on three occasions now, we've actually had donor families meet the recipient of one of their sons or daughters or husband's organs and tissues. So and that's very well attended. Hundreds of people attend that every year, and that's held at the Arboretum. And of course, people come to the Arboretum, and one of the first things to do is to go down to the memorial, because it's so well received, the memorial, and it's really unusual. I don't know whether you've seen the picture of it or not. And there will be a picture of the memorial on the network, and it's a bronze plinth. There's a plinth, then there's a bronze covering, and there's of a forget-me-not. It's about a metre wide, the forget-me-not, and that's micromosaiced in the forget-me-not colours. And standing on the forget-me-not is the butterfly, and again it's micromosaiced. So it is unusual, but it's been so well received, and they love it. And we do as well, mind you. It'd be wrong to say that we don't like, because it's great. And we will help NHS staff or NHS itself in whatever aspect we can, because as you alluded to earlier, we support donor families. But we have two strings of our bow, really, and that is the support of donor families and the promotion of organ and tissue donation. And that's our remit. Nothing more than that. You know, I think there are a number of charities that go too wide in what they try and do, and do what you're good at, and do what you can do to help people. And that's basically what the Donor Family Network does. We have 9 trustees, one of whom is a specialist nurse. And she feeds back to other specialist nurses. We've got some very nice patrons who are very generous to us and everything else. So we're motoring along. This year, for the last 3 years, we send all our families a Christmas decoration for the tree. And that, again, is growing in the amount we're sending out. And we have it specially designed, and it comes in its own box and everything else. And last year was an angel with a purple heart. Again, that's so well received. I think there's 100 more families round about this year wanting them as well. We're obviously doing something right.
No, I think one of the themes that I'm really picking up is this, the power of being in a community and being with people that get it. Because I think it can probably, I can only assume, but it would be so isolating and feeling like you're the only person that's experiencing these things. Whereas what you're doing is creating a group that gets it.
Well, we are creating a group. We're creating somewhere, some person, somehow, that if people want to contact us, we're easily contactable. And that's because some people don't need us at all, and that's great. But other people, they need perhaps one meeting or one telephone call. Others require more, and some people just happy to be with us for life and to attend some of the things that we attend, and we do. And if they want to become involved, we try and get them involved somewhere along the line and telling their stories, which is very therapeutic to tell your stories to somebody who doesn't even understand anything about it. And so we will try and facilitate, but all the time trying to be positive about donation, because that the cause is bigger than all of us, really.
No, absolutely. I think that kind of leads then onto my final question. So what do you think that families want or need when dealing with potential organ donation? And what do you think it's important that families should know when considering the potential of organ donation for their loved one?
I think if I answer the second part first, I think as soon as it becomes obvious and that there is no coming back from the either the illness that's caused the brain to sort of die, or the accident that's caused whatever it is, as soon as it actually becomes obvious to the medical staff that there is no recovery, and that person is going to be, there's only one place he's going or she's going, then I think that it should be an immediate alert. And then so that for the benefit of donation, they can approach that family and give them the bad news sooner rather than later, because sometimes hanging on, people are building up their hopes more often, you know, that there it is going to be all right. But if it's not going to be all right, then I think that really they should be told as soon as possible, which in turn will give the medical staff a better chance of putting things in place, getting the retrieval teams organised, everything like that. So, and one thing that I think an awful lot of us are concerned with is the amount of time it takes to fill these forms in. I think the forms really should be simplified down to about 5 questions. I'm sure, rather than going to the, you know, you get the approval of the family or the non-approval, you get the approval of the family, and then you can start the ball rolling. And then delicately, if there's other questions to be asked, that can be asked afterwards, but get the ball rolling. And then, and so then the family know what, that there's what's going to happen. And you can approach other questions that are on the form, or the forms I've got now, afterwards, because it takes so long. And you, in what can really be, do you consent to the organs and tissues being used for the purpose of transplantation and donation? It's just, it's as simple as that, really. And in my view, yes, obviously, there's an awful lot more to that than just asking that question. But I think that they've really got to radicalise the format in which they ask people. And then, and I think donor, because I think an awful lot of people are aware that donor families, when they'll be waiting 5 or 6 hours, and they will withdraw their consent, and they have done on a number of occasions. And what a waste, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, and it's just prolonging the start of the grieving process. And everybody's got to grieve. Now, the first part, what was the first part again?
The first part was saying, what do you think that families want or need when dealing with potential organ donation?
In respect of asking and everything else, that family need to be in a different type of room in a lot of cases to what they find themselves in. Somewhere in the police, like you have rape suites, whereby it's a comforting room and where people can relax and everything else. And I think the same philosophy needs to apply in relation to donation, because if you can make someone comfortable, it makes it so much easier to ask more difficult questions. And, you know, it's not bribery or anything like that. It's just been logical that you're going to be, it's a horrendous event that they're going through. And the more comfortable you can make them, the easier it is for them. Plus, it's also easier for the medical staff who've got to ask the questions. So, and I think that's a very important thing. I also think that from 20 odd years of knowing donor families, that a thank you letter is very, very important. It doesn't matter who that person is. I mean, if it's just, it wants to say, I just want to thank you so much. And because then they know that it's appreciated. They know that, and they also know that someone's had it. And quite a lot of people hang on to those letters with great pride, and they'll show people the letters. And for example, and another thing that we do as the Donor Family Network is that we invite all families to join us every year, the new families, would they like to be presented with a certificate of appreciation. And that is, and they can have as many as they want, and they'll, it's not a problem. But that, and that idea came from America as well. But that again is so appreciated. I've been into a number of houses where people have loved ones have donated this, and there's the certificate upon the wall and or in a prominent place in a, and it's and it's a talking point also, and people do ask, and again it allows that family more latitude to grieve properly and to come out of it with a far more positive outlook attitude than they would have otherwise done. So that's important. And we're still not accepted everywhere, the Donor Family Network. And I think that we're non-confrontational. We don't push ourselves forwards, because people have to be satisfied that we're an asset, not a hindrance. And also, if you allow them to put you forward, you know you have their endorsement. And that is very, very important that we work in conjunction with NHSBT and everything else. Because I've known a lot of horror stories, and I'll know that here more before I go to other pastures. But and the charity will continue, and it will get bigger, better, stronger, as because the same ideals apply now as did all those years ago when we first started. And it's run by donor families for donor families.
I think that's wonderful. And speaking of appreciation, to end, I would like to express my appreciation for you and all the work you do with the Donor Family Network, but also for sharing yours and Rebecca's story today. Thank you so much for all your time. And I was just wondering if you had any final thoughts for our listeners to wrap up today.
The final thoughts is that you cannot do anything about the grief that you're going to face, but you can make it such a positive outcome. And it's a legacy. It's not your legacy. It's the legacy of the loved one you've lost. And that legacy, it's like the ripples on the pond. You throw a stone in and the ripples go on forever. And I can tell you some lovely stories. For example, I will tell you one. I met this girl 2 years after I became a donor dad, and she was about 17, 18 at the time, and she'd had a liver transplant when she was 15. She'd got a virus, went into the hospital, she would have died without a liver transplant, and fortunately she got it. And she was very sporty, so she went to the transplant games. And I used to see her at the transplant games every year, and we always used to chat, and I used to chat to her parents as well. And her donor family were actually members of the network. Subsequently, I mean, she received a transplant before we existed, so not long, but she did. And anyway, she met this guy at the transplant games, and he'd had a kidney transplant. And they subsequently got married. And anyway, I was at the British Transplant Games in Bolton, which is a few years ago now. And I was walking to the car park, and round the corner came this girl, Rebecca, same name as my daughter, Rebecca, and her husband. And she was pushing her 8-week-old daughter. Would never have happened.
That's beautiful.
And there's lots of stories like that.
Yeah.
And that's the legacy.
Yeah. And the gift of life, as you say.
Yes. Yep.
That's a wonderful story to end on. Don't think I can top that in any way. No, that was brilliant. And this is our final episode of the Interviews with the Experts podcast. I've been Frances Hand, and thank you to everybody for listening. If you haven't caught up with all our episodes, they can be found wherever you get your podcasts.